KPBS On Demand is supported by the San Diego County Toyota Dealers, presenting the new 2024 RAV4 with on- and off-the-road versatility and up to a 262-mile range with gas, hybrid, and plug-in options available. Visit your Toyota dealer for more. San Diego County Toyota Dealers. We make it easy.
The opinions or views expressed in today's episode are solely of those who express them and do not reflect those of Port of Entry or KPBS. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, folks. Hudo Ortiz here, producer of Port of Entry. And we want to finagle this third bonus episode in a row before we return to our season lineup. If you've been keeping up with the news, we are set to go through a second Trump term. And given the nature of what has been expressed by President-elect Trump, we are wondering, what does that mean for a border community?
Tell me why you come to America. I'm a Canadian. I want to understand.
Not back to you.
We're going to fix our borders. We're going to fix everything about our country.
That's why, to keep our families safe, the Republican platform promises to launch the largest deportation operation in the history of our country. Even larger than that of President Dwight D. Eisenhower.
If they don't stop this onslaught of criminals and drugs coming into our country, I'm going to immediately impose a 25% tariff on everything they send in to the United States of America.
With me is our host, Natalie Gonzalez, who just welcomed the next generation in her family. Congrats, Natalie, on being an aunt.
Thank you.
Felicidades.
And Alan Lilienthal, who is yet to introduce another generation of Lilienthals.
Working on it.
We'll
Working
see.
To help us understand what to expect from a second Trump term, we have a very special guest with us, KPBS's own investigative border reporter, Gustavo Solis. Hola, Gustavo.
Hello.
Bienvenido, Gustavo.
Bienvenido. Gracias. Gracias.
I should welcome. Say my brother had a kid a few months ago.
Okay. So. Well, really?
Hey.
A lot of new babies in KPBS family.
Regards to your brother. Mm-hmm.
Jorge. And his kid's name is also Jorge. So hello, Georgie.
Hola, Jorge. Awesome. Y hola, Nicolás también.
The KPBS member pool is expanding.
Before we continue with the questions with Gustavo, chicos, please help us introduce the program.
From KPBS, this is Port of Entry,
where we tell cross-border stories that connect us.
I'm Alan Lilienthal.
And I'm Natalie Gonzalez.
Hi, I'm Bill Hohen.
And I'm Ted Hohen.
Over the past 50 years, our family has brought many world-class dealerships to Carlsbad, including Mercedes-Benz, Porsche, Audi, Honda, Acura, Jaguar, and Land Rover.
That's right. This year we're celebrating 50 years in Carlsbad.
So on behalf of the entire Hohen family, we want to thank San Diego. Throughout the years, we've taken tremendous pride in meeting and even exceeding our customers' automotive needs.
We value the relationships with our clients and look forward to serving you for years to come. We invite you to visit one of the Hohen Carlsbad dealerships or hohenmotors.com.
You are listening to Port of Entry.
Since his victory, President-elect Donald Trump has made various declarations threatening that if Mexico doesn't stop the flow of migrants or drugs northbound, he'll impose a 25% tariff on all goods from Mexico. That news,
along with his plan to use the military to carry out mass deportations of millions of undocumented migrants,
has worried many in the border community.
We wondered how the news of his re-election was received by border commuters, those who could be directly affected. So we sent our producer Julio to the field to capture the perspectives and emotions at the border.
Most of the folks we interviewed preferred to omit their last names.
Carlos, a taxi driver, noted that any disruption of cross-border traffic would affect him.
Si no hay trabajo aquí en la línea, no hay trabajo para los de la calle. Es lo mismo, pues, en la frontera, lo que los da de comer a todos.
Joseph Jacuda, a disabled truck driver, was confident the border will never be shut down. Maybe temporarily, like for a few days or weeks, if it even comes to that.
No, no creo. No porque es bienestar, porque es mucha economía la que entra. No creo que haya eso.
There's just too much money at play to shut it down, he says.
A few people expressed concern that border traffic could experience a slowdown if Trump's policies are enacted.
One of them was Gael, a college student.
Sí, porque soy parte del flujo fronterizo, por lo que sea el proceso más lento o haya más rigurosidad, tendré que darle más atención a algo que pues ya es habitual para mí. Puede ser positivo.
Gael believes there are pros and cons.
A pro being that the border might be more secure with more officers on the field checking all inbound vehicles and pedestrians, but on the other hand,
negativo pensando en los requerimientos que se tengan para cruzar, pensando en que añada nuevos criterios para las personas que pueden cruzar.
That could also mean a longer wait time for him.
Pues no sé ni qué pensar porque con tantas amenazas que hizo de subir los aranceles y eso, entonces pues al hacer eso nos va a subir todo acá en Tijuana, pero pues.
For Socorro Ceballos, it might mean that if the suggested tariffs on Mexican goods go through, that may impact the cost of living in the region.
You know, if everyday goods are less affordable for San Diegans, that may push more people to Tijuana, driving prices up there.
Pero pues a ver qué pasa.
¿Usted cree que ha sido, vaya a ser positivo o negativo para la gente que cruza la frontera?
Yo pienso que va a ser igual que la otra vez. Pues, al menos a muchos a lo mejor sí les perjudicó. A mí no me perjudicó, pero pues igual, no sé.
While she says she won't be affected by the crackdown on undocumented immigrants, folks like Salvador, a body shop artist, are a bit more worried.
Yo me he metido a esto, ya tengo como medio año mirando todo lo que está haciendo y porque afecta a mucha familia mía, que, you know, the immigrants, you know. Pero I'm a U.S. citizen, so ha tenido problemas con mi familia de todo esto.
Salvador is a member of a mixed status family. Although he is a U.S. citizen, he feels family members who aren't are at risk of deportation.
Es muy diferente a lo que estaba haciendo Biden a comparado a él. Muy, muy diferente.
Salvador carries a lingering fear of the uncertainty ahead, but others, like Evencio, are confident it'll be just another day in Tijuana.
Ponle que lo que sí puede afectar, como de otros años, ya estamos acostumbrados aquí en Tijuana, pues todos los que mandan para acá después de que los regresan.
Evencio is a vendor at the San Isidro Port of Entry. He says there might be an uptick in deportees with the new administration, but that's happened before. And Tijuana always finds a way to overcome the situation.
Even becoming the home of all new arrivals like it has over the last decades.
Donde todos los migrantes venían a hacer sus huelgas aquí y todo eso. Pero es pasajero, ya está uno acostumbrado a todo eso. Pero no crees que afecte tanto, simplemente sí. Te puedo decir que va a afectar mucho en... La gente se asusta por cosas que, no, que va a deportar. Pero es que siempre ha habido deportaciones.
Overall, the reactions and attitudes were mixed.
Some take these policy threats very seriously, as they remember similar calls to shut down the border in Trump's first term. And while the threat itself isn't new, its renewed focus feels even more alarming now.
And others feel like it is just another day on the border.
Port of Entry will be back after a short break.
KPBS On Demand is supported by the San Diego County Toyota Dealers, presenting the new 2025 Camry with refined design and performance. See your local Toyota dealer to learn about all the benefits the new 2025 Camry offers. The San Diego County Toyota Dealers. We make it easy.
You're listening to Port of Entry.
We are with KPBS Border Reporter Gustavo Solis. Hello, Gustavo. Thank you again for being here. Before we go into our questions, tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your experience covering the border for the past few years.
Yeah, sure. Well, my name's Gustavo. I was born in Mexico City, but grew up here in San Diego. My family moved here when I was in second grade. So I spent most of my life here in San Diego until high school. I spent 10 years in the East Coast for school, and I started my journalism career over there. And actually, I started covering immigration in 2016. So my immigration career kind of coincides Trump's rise to power and all of the policies and issues he's brought to the forefront.
Guys, take it away with the questions.
Thank you.
Before we go into more immigration stuff, I'm curious, before you were doing immigration stuff,
what were you focusing on as a journalist, or was immigration always kind of on the horizon for you?
Oh, no, no. I kind of not lucked into it. It was just kind of by chance. I started my career in New York. My first job title was Crime and Mayhem Reporter.
Okay.
For a small website. It was cool.
Okay.
It was a cool way to get to know the town. So I would every day jump on the subway from, you know, a shooting in the Bronx, a fire in Brooklyn, some press conference in Queens, just always kind of hustling from crime scene to crime scene.
Crime and Mayhem.
Crime and Mayhem Reporter. Yeah, for a website that doesn't exist anymore. The owner shut it down after we tried to form a union.
So if Spider-Man and Batman were real, you would be right there with them.
A little smaller, yeah. but that was like the old school track of journalism, right? You start covering crime and then you move up to like a geographic beat or something smaller. I covered the neighborhood of Harlem and East Harlem. I would do a lot of housing stuff. You know, there were a lot of slumlords up there, a lot of issues with public housing not being fully funded. And then I got to a point in New York where I knew I wanted to move to the next step, which is a more specialized beat. And there was this opportunity to work in Palm Springs for the Desert Sun, which is a Gannett paper. Gannett is the company that owns USA Today. So it was a cool opportunity given to a young reporter to cover immigration in Southern California and have a national platform because USA Today would pick up a lot of the stories. So that's kind of how I got into it.
That's cool. So it just so happened to coincide with your roots and your past and kind of tie it all together.
Yeah, it was nice. I mean, in New York, I was the only guy that spoke Spanish in the newsroom. And so I saw how valuable that is, like interviewing, like helping other people with their interviews, especially covering a lot of the slumlord issues. Like most of the tenants were immigrants who didn't really speak anything other than Spanish. So it gave me a foot in the door. It kind of loosely tied with immigration. But I knew I wanted to come to California, and it was a great way to do it, right? Covering something I experienced a little bit myself as an immigrant, but in a community that I like grew up in Southern California.
Mm. All right, let's get to Don Trump.
Let's get to the story. Gustavo, first question. How will a second Trump presidency impact the border flow?
I think it's tough to say. I mean, it will. We all know it will in a lot of different ways. I think It depends who you ask and what your focus is, right? I know some folks over at the Chamber of Commerce might be worried about tariffs and what that might mean. From the immigration standpoint, I mean, San Diego has been one of the most used places, right? In all the border sectors along the southern border, San Diego has been one of the most active ones in terms of people crossing illegally. I think historically, San Diego is a really interesting place along the border because it is one of the kind of testing grounds for border enforcement. We were one of the first places that got a border wall back in the Clinton years. We have two border walls now. A lot of the technology is used in San Diego first and then exported throughout the border, like different surveillance technologies. Different policies like Remain in Mexico and Title 42 are kind of tried a little bit in San Diego and then taken elsewhere. If you remember the first Trump administration, when they were building the new border wall, all the prototypes are here. You would go down to Otay Mesa and you could see all the different types of walls. So from that perspective, I think San Diego's in an interesting place to see what the new administration will look like.
Mm. Yeah, because, I mean, politicians say a lot of things and you mm-hmm. never really know what percentage of that will actually get enacted and done. However, there is obviously a lot of anxiety, especially like our audience happens mm-hmm. to be, you know, in a lot of mixed families. Some people might have undocumented family members who mm-hmm. work here. What do you think a second Trump term is going to do to these families? How is it going to affect them?
Yeah, I think part of it, the impact, you're already seeing it. People are stressed out. People are afraid. They're anxious. And that is by design, right? Trump, like the rhetoric and the people he has appointed, like Tom Homan and Stephen Miller, are hardliners. So just the fear itself, you can expect to see more of an increase in anxiety and stress. Actually, for KPBS, I just wrote a story talking to a therapist who specializes in talking to undocumented folks. So that's an initial impact. I know there are folks in Tijuana that they shouldn't do this, but they cross every day on tourist or border visas, and they could cross to work. There might be more enforcement on that side, so we could potentially fall an impact to that. In terms of undocumented folks and mixed status, I think one of the most immediate things that the Trump administration can do, which is something he did the first go around, is eliminate the ICE's priority for who they go after, right? So ICE has these priorities under Obama and under Biden that says, you know, we recognize that there are, you know, between 10 and 20 million undocumented people in the country. There's a limited number of ICE agents. We're not going to arrest everyone. Like that's kind of ridiculous. Like just the ratio, the logistics, the feasibility, it can't be done. So what do? You create this priority that says we're going to go after people who have criminal convictions and already have orders of removal. That narrows the scope so we can just focus on them and be a little bit more efficient without destabilizing communities. During the first Trump term, one of the things he did was the zero tolerance, and he removed that priority. And that's when you saw all of the collateral arrests, collateral deportations, right? So they would go to one house where they had one target who did have a criminal record, but that person was living with, you know, a couple other families. So they would see that his uncle and grandma and niece were also in the country illegally. Now, they didn't have criminal records, they had jobs, they had been paying their taxes, but they're still fair game because of their lack of status. So we saw that during the first Trump term. That's something that could return. Mm-hmm. I will say, being in California, there are some protections from some of the sanctuary policies that were passed during the first term, right? Local law enforcement is limited in how they can help ICE deport people. They're not allowed to ask anyone for their immigration status. They're not allowed to tell ICE where people live or whether someone was arrested or anything like that. So that is something that people listening can kind of take as a sign of comfort. At least they have some protections that folks in Arizona and Texas may not have, unfortunately. And I think one of the big things about mass deportation is that it sounds great. It sounds simple. You can put in a bumper sticker. There are very real logistical challenges to mass deportation, right? One is just the money. It takes a lot of money to detain people, to fly all those airplanes. Like the federal government spends millions and millions of dollars chartering private flights for deportations. There's only so many beds in detention centers, right? So if they're at capacity, where do you put them? That's another logistical challenge. You have to open up another facility or rent one out. It's a lot harder to deport somebody than people think. And I think those logistics are going to get in the way of Trump's mission.
There's also like a due process issue, not having enough judges, enough lawyers.
Well, there's that
lawyers.
Too in immigration court. Yeah, if you don't have, I mean, for folks who are in the country without status but don't have orders of removal yet, you can't just deport them. You have to detain them. They have to go through a process of immigration court. And right now there's a multi-million case backlog in immigration court, so it takes a long time. They would have to either find a way to remove those due process protections or hire a lot of immigration judges and speed up that process.
And they're talking about slashing a lot of federal employees.
Yeah,
so it's
exactly.
Like it's kind of counterintuitive or contradictory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they can do a lot and they're saying a lot. I think I'm curious to see how it starts playing out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
From what we saw previously in the previous administration, the first term, what do you think might just happen that might be just a little bit different if you compare it from the first term?
I think for context, it's important to know, like, some things that Trump can just do through executive order. Other things, he's limited by the law. Congress would have to pass something or the Supreme Court would have to approve it, and there would be legal challenges from states or individuals. Another limitation is lack of funding, you know, and the other one would be just approval from different state or even other governments, right? Like one of the things they want to do is bring back Remain in Mexico, which is a very controversial policy. It forced anyone going through asylum, you had to be in Mexico until that case was adjudicated. And it would take months and months and months to adjudicate those cases. It was very controversial because our federal government was forcing asylum seekers, who are by definition some of the most vulnerable people in the world, to live in border cities, some of which were on the, you know, Department of State Do Not Travel list because they were so dangerous. The problems were that, A, attorneys from the U.S. had a hard time getting them. So there were a lot of issues with people just not having legal representation and losing their case, not because they didn't have a good case, but they don't have law degrees to fight and advocate for themselves. The other one, and I think is the most controversial aspect of this policy, is that Human Rights First documented hundreds of cases of people who had valid asylum claims, were forced to wait in Mexico, and while they were in Mexico, they were beaten, robbed, sexually assaulted, kidnapped, a couple people died. So, yeah, it's a deterrent. It's supposed to stop people from filing illegitimate asylum claims, but it also put a lot of people in harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that, if you're looking at it for now, you can only do that if Mexico allows you to do that, right? Trump pressured AMLO, let's go around with tariffs, and AMLO said, okay, sure, you can do it. I don't know how the new president will do it. I don't know what the appetite for something like that is. But it's a policy that is 100% dependent on Mexico's green light.
The last thing I heard is that he's thinking of imposing a 25% tariff if Mexico does not stop the flow of drugs or the flow of immigration and just squash it.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I think some of his business buddies would not like that.
Yeah, I mean, we focus a lot on Trump, but can you maybe educate us a little bit on what Claudia Sheinbaum's position has been through all of this? I haven't really kept up with, since Trump was elected, what Mexico's response has been to all these claims that Trump makes. Because as you said, you need two people to tango. Like you need mm-hmm. them to cooperate. For half his agenda to even be enacted.
I'm curious to see how they respond, right? Sheinbaum has continued AMLO's practice of helping the U.S. with immigration enforcement in Mexico. And that actually earlier this year led to a decline in apprehensions at our border, right? We saw a couple of years of record highs. They went down and it coincided with immigration stops going up in Mexico. It basically just expands our border into there. We'll see how that goes. I know both administrations, like the previous and the current one in Mexico, are very reluctant to do the bidding of the U.S. Like, politically, it's not a good look for them, right? I mean, AMLO famously didn't even speak English. So I'm kind of curious to see how that plays out. But it is a political conversation to be had. I think for López Obrador, the calculation was, look, Trump and Biden, I'll help you with immigration issues, but get off my back on domestic policy. Let me kind of do whatever I want in that regard.
Mm.
I don't know if Sheinbaum wants to make a similar negotiation or what that would look like. So I'm very, very curious to see what happens on that front.
Mm-hmm.
And Gustavo, you already mentioned this, that you recently, actually this week, you published a story about therapists working with migrants to ease anxiety. But yeah. You also recently published, well, last week, I think, a story about migrant advocates that are mobilizing in the wake of, you know,
Trump election.
So, and actually, we have the story available in Spanish, too. what measures are these advocates starting to take ahead?
Right now, it's just planning, like getting ready. A lot of these folks are the same people, like they were around in 2016. So they kind of know what strategies they can take. A lot of it plays out in the courts, right? Trump will try to implement a policy like Remain in Mexico or Title 42. Groups like the ACLU will sue them to try to prevent that from happening at all, right? So it would look like that. Some states would push back as well. So it happens at the federal level with those lawsuits, but also at the state level. I know Governor Gavin Newsom is calling a special session in December to try to do some things that will limit the impact that Trump policies could have on California. And at the local level, advocates are already, I'm actually working on a story right now about people disappointed with Mayor Todd Gloria, who has kind of not really said anything about immigration. He kind of shies away from it. He doesn't really answer questions about immigration, and they feel that they're not supported. They actually point to the fact that the mayor defunded the Office of Immigrant Affairs this year. And now it's like, dude, you defunded this office less than a year before Trump comes back. What message does that send to the immigrant community, right?
Okay. And that story is coming,
hopefully next week.
Okay. Hopefully we'll drop it at the same time.
To finish off this interview, Gustavo, I'm curious, speaking about the economy, obviously Trump's biggest running points were the economy and immigration. I'm curious how San Diego in particular is so reliant on the immigrant community for so much of the economy, legal and illegal immigrants, who people who cross the border every day to come to work.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously slowing that will slow the economy in America. But Trump also promises to increase American jobs and all this stuff and all the promises that he's made. How do you see it playing out in terms of the costs that you mentioned earlier for deportations and to round people up, to hire more ICE officers? So costs are going to increase there. Costs are going to profits are going to decrease if there's less immigrants in San Diego in particular.
Mm-hmm.
So how does the math isn't mathing for me?
I don't think it maths for a lot of people. Well, that's a lot of the underlying framing of some of these policies, right? Like mass deportation is being framed as a policy that will increase public safety, right? It doesn't, the data doesn't back it up.
Right.
Here in San Diego, it is true that we saw a record number of people crossing illegally in the last year. It's also true that during that last year, crime went down. And if there was a link, and several studies have shown that there's no real, like, direct link, at least not the one that's being put out there, that more illegal migration causes more crime. Studies actually show the opposite, right? There's really good data out of Texas showing that immigrants, those in the country legally and illegally, are less likely to commit crime than people born in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it doesn't math. It doesn't make sense. That's because the rhetoric is separated from the reality mm-hmm. on the ground. When it comes to the economy, yeah, it is a little counterintuitive to deport a lot of undocumented people who are contributing members of the workforce. I know here in California, undocumented workers contribute something like $3 billion in state and local taxes every year, $3 billion. And they're overrepresented in certain economies. They're overrepresented in certain industries, construction, agriculture, food and service. Like here in San Diego, those are three pretty big industries. And if you lose a significant portion, even just like 5 to 10% of that workforce in those like industries, it would have a really, really bad impact on the economy.
Gustavo, thank you so much for helping us out.
You, Gustavo.
Yeah, no problem. Sorry to ramble, but yeah.
No, that was
insightful.
No.
Very.
The impact of Trump's policies is still unclear. But if the past is any lesson, the border community needs to stay informed and vigilant. This episode of Port of Entry was written and produced by Julio Cesar Ortiz Franco.
Adrián Villalobos is technical producer and sound designer. This episode was edited by Elma González Lima Brandao and Melissa Sandoval.
Lisa Morissette is director of audio programming and operations.
This program is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
This project was also made possible with support from California Humanities, a nonprofit partner of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Visit callhome.org.
I'm Alan Lilienthal.
And I'm Natalie Gonzalez. Nos vemos pronto.
KPBS On Demand is supported by Bilhau Plumbing, Heating, and Air Restoration and Flood Services. Family-owned and operated over 4 decades, Bilhau has been serving the plumbing, heating, and air and water damage needs of the San Diego area since 1980. With their fleet of trained professionals, Bilhau has the ability to service all major and minor plumbing and HVAC emergency needs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Bilhau is committed to providing excellent service to their customers with transparent quotes and attention to detail on every job. Whether you're in need of an HVAC installation, plumbing, or water damage restoration in San Diego, they offer the convenience of scheduling an appointment over the phone, online, or through live chat on their website. Call 1-800-BILHOW or visit bilhau.com, because we know how.